Well, it's Tuesday. Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to the program today. And we're excited to talk with someone who is very knowledgeable about things that are going to be taking shape from a legal perspective in our country. As you know, Judge Neil Gorsuch, as of yesterday, is now Justice Neil Gorsuch. He was sworn in, signed his oath, and took his oath, and he is now on the Supreme Court. Carrie Kupak is a legal communications director with the Alliance Defending Freedom, and on April 19th, Justice Gorsuch will be sitting on the court and hearing the Trinity Lutheran Church versus Comer case. Comer is governor of Missouri. This is a case that comes from Missouri, and it's a case of blatant religious discrimination, blatant unconstitutional acts, so the plaintiff, Trinity Lutheran, says, committed against them by the state, having to do with playground equipment. And so we'll find out from Carrie all about the case and her thoughts on how it might play out. The Alliance Defending Freedom has been involved in helping Trinity Lutheran Church, and so Carrie is right there in the middle on the front line. She knows exactly what's going on, and this is going to be, folks, a case that will probably be what they call a landmark case, one that resonates for years. And so it's going to be exciting now that we have a full 9-member Supreme Court again to see how this plays out. And we'll talk to Carrie in just a moment, but she's also going to talk about the transgender bathroom issue going forward here in North Carolina. You know, HB 2 was repealed and replaced by House Bill 142. And she has some very interesting insight about how Title IX is being used, and it's actually pretty much slapping women in the face. And it's an insight that I've not heard from anyone else. And so I'm going to get out of the way, and let's get busy. Let's talk with Carrie Kupak here on What Matters in North Carolina. Joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina is Carrie Kupak. She is with the Alliance Defending Freedom. In fact, she is their legal communications director. Carrie, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
The reason we're having you on is today is kind of a big day in our nation's history, as Neil Gorsuch has been confirmed and taken his oath, and he's now a justice of the United States Supreme Court. And one of the cases that will be before him, it looks like, with arguments on April 19th, is the case of Trinity Lutheran Church out in Missouri versus, is it Comer or is it Sarah Parker Pauley?
It's Comer now.
Okay.
After the election, there's a new AG.
Oh, okay. So I was looking on the Supreme Court website and they still had the old one. But nevertheless.
Sure, new governor, actually. That's right.
Mm-hmm. This is a case of basically blatant discrimination in the realm of religion. The folks in Missouri preventing this church, I guess, from being involved with receiving playground surfacing stuff because they're a church. And I'll let you explain it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting case. In fact, it's being called the remaining marquee case of the spring term by Adam Lipkak at the New York Times, and all eyes are on it because, like you said, we now have a 9th justice, and that's Justice Neil Gorsuch. And the facts are very simple, and they're undisputed. It's a case about a religious preschool, the Learning Center, which is owned by a church, and that's the Trinity Lutheran Church of Columbia, Missouri. And this particular preschool applied to a state grant program that provides reimbursement grants to purchase rubberized surface material made out of tire scraps for children's playgrounds. This is a program the state put into place. It's kind of a win-win. It's a way to get the old tires out of the landfills and provide nonprofits with safer playground surfaces for kids to enjoy and just be safer on. Well, the school ranked number 5 out of the 44 applications that were submitted to Missouri that year. The state accepted 14, but despite the fact that the Learning Center at Trinity Lutheran was ranked number 5, they were ultimately rejected from the program solely because the preschool belongs to a church.
Well, we certainly can't have that now, can we?
No, we can't.
So, obviously, they have gone as far as they can now before the Supreme Court. And has there been any lower court involvement in this? Can you tell us what's gone on so far?
Yeah, the school didn't have any luck all the way up, but the Supreme Court ended up taking the case. And they took it, I really think, for the very simple proposition that is, should people of faith be treated like second-class citizens and be denied secular public benefits that are generally available to the public solely because of their religious status? And again, I think the bottom line principle here is that every child's safety matters, and the government should treat safety at religious schools the same as they do at public schools. So this is a very important case for free exercise, and is certainly going to take on many years of jurisprudence that relates to that area of law.
Now, I am intrigued, Carrie, that you said they basically didn't have any luck all the way up to the Supreme Court. So lower courts were saying, yeah, it's okay to discriminate against you guys.
Well, they didn't reach the merits, actually. There was a lot of procedural things that happened on the way up. But when the Supreme Court decided to take it, they took it addressing the merits, and they're addressing whether or not Missouri's constitutional amendment, which prohibits indirect or direct aid to churches, does that violate the United States Constitution? Do they take it too far? And we say yes. We say that the government should not discriminate against religious organizations and exclude them from receiving a generally available public benefit simply because they are religious. Because let's talk about what these public benefits are in general. This would be like a state prohibiting police from responding to a burglary at a parochial school or a yeshiva, or a city stopping the fire department from putting out a fire at a church. This is a very secular benefit, the rubberized surface, resurfacing of a playground in order to make it more safe. It really doesn't get more secular than that. So obviously the implications are pretty endless. If the Supreme Court sides with the state and says that a state government can deny such a very basic public secular benefit to a religious organization, what can't they deny them?
Well, and what intrigues me about this, Carrie, is that it's the school. It's not even so much the church. It's just the fact that the church, you know, as a registered nonprofit, has this school. And so it's not like the church is saying, you know, hey, we want to use taxpayer money to build a new set of pews or a new baptistry or something like that. This is playground equipment, for goodness sakes. And I just find it kind of ridiculous, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And to that point about playground equipment, they really have to use it for that rubberized resurfacing. They actually have to show receipts. It's a reimbursement grant. So the school actually has to lay out money themselves to show that they have purchased this pour-in place, this rubberized surface that, you know, I'm sure you've seen at local playgrounds near where you live.
Right.
We all have seen. We know what that rubber surface looks like. And that rubber surface has been proven to stop head injuries and injuries that children often get when they play on playgrounds. And so the school has to show that that's what they use the funds for before they get reimbursed with this grant from the Missouri State Program. And I think it's important to remember, where does this money come from exactly, this grant program? These are fees that people pay, that every person in Missouri, whether you're a person of faith or not, has to pay when they purchase a tire. There's a small fee they have to pay. Those fees go into a pot which fund this particular grant program. Because as I said earlier, Missouri was looking at all these tires, just taking up space in their landfills, and they were looking for ways to recycle them. So using the fee money that everyone has to pay when they purchase a tire in Missouri, they created this grant program. And it allows them to get rid of these tires and provide these safer playground surfaces for nonprofits around the state.
Well, I'm reading the brief, the most recent brief response from the folks at the church, and I really love this introduction. It says that the facts of this case are undisputed. The Department of Natural Resources discriminates blatantly on the basis of religious status. It proudly says so in its brief. One can hardly imagine a clearer case of discrimination than denying children a safe playground surface solely because they attend a religious preschool. You know, I mean, it's hard to wrap my mind around where we've gotten as a country, where now, even though kids are involved, that doesn't seem to matter, you know?
It's right. And the bottom line is a skinned knee.
Yeah.
So falling off the slide, it hurts just as much on the playground of a religious school as it does on the playground of a public school or just some kind of secular nonprofit. And what's also interesting about this case is that over 90% of the kids who attend the preschool at Trinity Lutheran don't even attend the church itself. This is a real community resource, this particular school and the playground. And to that end, the school actually has what they call a, quote, open gate policy for the playground, meaning that after hours, kids are welcome, the kids and their families are welcome to enjoy the playground after school on the weekends. It's a real gathering point for the community. So when the state discriminates against a place like the Learning Center at Trinity Lutheran, they're really hurting the entire community.
You know, I can relate to that a whole lot because where my family went to church for a long time, they had a preschool and it was completely separate from the church. It wasn't like a feeding, you know, a gateway into the church. I mean, people from the community came there, they dropped their kids off and they took them back home. And a lot of them never had any other interaction with the church at all, other than driving up on the property and you know, dropping their kids off at the daycare or the preschool. So, this case, it says, is not about subsidizing or preferring religion. It's about prohibiting religious status discrimination, which violates the free exercise and the equal protection clauses. Can you, for our listeners, is there a lot of difference between the free exercise and the equal protection clauses?
Well, as you know, the free exercise provision in the First Amendment of the Constitution is pretty straightforward. It's just saying that simply the government can't prohibit someone engaging in the exercise of their religious freedom. And the government also, in the Establishment Clause, is the government can't establish basically an official church or an official religion for the country, or depending on what the state constitutional provision is for that particular state. But I think it's pretty obvious that if someone's driving by a playground, whether it's at a church or a YMCA or some kind of other nonprofit organization, no one is looking at a safe playground surface and saying, oh no, that's it. The state is clearly establishing a religion in our state or our country, and that's just silly. Nobody would think that. And the religious status comes into play with equal protection, that we can't deny, in a country like America, we don't deny people of faith benefits and access to generally available secular public benefits like their non-religious counterparts. That completely flies in the face of the First Amendment and what religious freedom means in America.
Now, our guest is Carrie Kupak. She's with the Alliance for Defending Freedom. And excellent, excellent. We're so glad to have you. And wanted to ask you from a, you know, kind of a ripple effect. There seems to be a lot of attack on people of faith going on in the country these days. Particularly, we've seen on college campuses in areas of, you know, free speech, that if you're a conservative or a person of faith, you know, you don't have that right on a college campus, seemingly. Also, here in North Carolina, the as I'm sure you're aware, the whole transgender issue came to head with House Bill 2, mm-hmm. and people of faith that spoke out in defense of keeping women and children safe in not only restrooms but locker rooms and that sort of thing, you know, they were vilified. And there might be a religious answer to this, but what do you think from a cultural standpoint is going on? Why is the country suddenly just so vehemently against people of faith?
That's a great question. I don't have an answer other than that I think people don't understand what religious freedom is. And I'm going to address that first, and then I can talk about the transgender privacy bathroom issue. Secondly, when it comes to religious freedom, people are losing their sense of what that is, meaning they don't realize that civil liberties travel together. Religious liberty is our first freedom for a reason. I think Governor Bobby Jindal from Louisiana says it best when he has said that we did not create religious freedom. Religious freedom created us.
Wow.
And what is religious freedom? It's the ability to peacefully live and act and work consistently with one's convictions without threat of government punishment. That's why people came to America. That's what makes us distinct as Americans, and that's our shared heritage. This is our legacy That's something to be very proud of as Americans. And in fact, recently there was a study that came out a few months ago. There was a professor at Georgetown and a fellow from the Washington, D.C. Museum who wrote a study, and they actually quantified the value of goods and services provided to the country by faith-based organizations. And they valued these goods and services at over $1 trillion annually that faith-based organizations are providing to the country, to their neighborhoods, to their states, to their communities. And so what I always like to tell people is, like, look, even if you could care less about religion, I bet you care about the economy.
Yeah.
So there's $1 trillion of goods and services being provided each year. But again, I think it's important that people remember that freedom of speech, freedom of association, these are all freedoms that are directly tied to the ability to live and work according to one's faith and conscience. And so it's important that we do everything we can to affirm that freedom and to protect it as much as possible, because when there's one group that's being, like you said, vilified or attacked today, it could be another group tomorrow, depending on who's in power, and that should not be the case. Everybody in America should have the freedom to live and work peacefully, consistent with one's convictions.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in North Carolina, and I saw you talk very eloquently on a CBS program about the transgender issue. And just so you know, my first objection is that we have accepted in the media and in the course of politics the whole transgender issue. It's like, oh, yeah, this is real, and we should accept it and believe that people are, that this is a real thing. And yet there's medical studies coming out now showing that if these kids are not encouraged in that lifestyle, they'll grow out of it. And one group of psychologists actually called it child abuse to encourage transgenderism in a child. But that's another conversation. What we went through here in North Carolina, Carrie, is something that was, you know, very, very polarizing. And as you know, we had sporting organizations take games out of our state. And folks on the left were like, there's never been a problem in bathrooms. There's never been a problem with transgender men, attacking or hurting women in bathrooms. But they missed the entire point, because the law and the ordinance in Charlotte and the law in other places like Maryland, Washington, D.C., prohibits people who say they identify as a female from being forced to leave. And so now men could, under that, you know, set of rules, just go in and hang out. And all they would have to do is say, well, yeah, I'm identifying. And this was the problem. The Charlotte Observer here said that young girls needed to get over being uncomfortable with seeing, you know, excuse me, but male genitalia. I mean, I've never heard a more horrible thing in my life for somebody to write it in a newspaper.
Yeah, it's unreal. Exactly. And to your point, to send that message to our young people, especially young girls, when we are a culture where we're always talking about empowering young women, talking to girls about being all they can be and to speak up if something happens, right? That's this whole idea with fighting the campus rape culture. We're encouraging young women to speak up. Yet when it comes to this particular transgender locker room bathroom issue, we're suddenly telling women to ignore their instincts, to ignore their understandable feelings of distress and discomfort when being in an intimate facility like a shower room or locker room with the biological opposite sex. And we're telling them to shut up and just deal with it. That runs counter to the last 30 or 40 years, really actually of feminist thinking and movement as well, which is why the Supreme Court ultimately ended up kicking back to the lower courts, the Gloucester case, the transgender student case, you saw feminist groups filing amicus briefs on the side of the school that had created a compassionate and sensitive solution for the student who was identifying as transgender, allowing that student to use a separate facility to undress and use the restroom, while at the same time acknowledging the privacy and concerns of everyone else around that student. And feminist groups sided with the school, saying, look, we are sympathetic to the struggles of folks who identify as transgender, but using Title IX, which is the law that has been used in these particular cases, as a means to tell women that they no longer have a voice and that their concerns no longer matter is a complete violation of Title IX. And now the same law that was used to protect women and give women a fair shake and equal access to those facilities as their male counterparts were getting is now being used against women.
Yeah, that's a very, I haven't heard anybody else say that. So tip of the hat to you. That's a very strong point. Title IX supposedly making, you know, equality tantamount in women's sports and other things in college, and yet it's being used now against them. That's very insightful, Carrie.
Oh, well, thank you. I think that it's a point that should be discussed more. But to your point, yes, it's unreal what's happening. We should be listening to everyone's concerns, but more importantly, we should be doing everything that we can to protect the dignity, safety, and privacy of all people, whether they're all people in North Carolina, whether they're all the kids in the public schools. Good law does what it can to protect everyone's interests in the best way. And when you say that one particular person or student's interest outweigh everybody else around them, that's a real problem. That's not the way you make policy. That's not the way you make good law. Everyone's privacy, dignity, and safety should matter.
Well, I'm going to let you go here in just a moment, but this is the way that it occurred to me when and you know, they've repealed House Bill 2 here and replaced it with another bill, which, by the way, neither the extreme right or the extreme left like. So we'll see how far that goes along. But, you know, if you were out on a date with your husband or your boyfriend or your daughter, and they went into the restroom or you went into the restroom and a guy followed you in, it is a natural male protective impulse and reflex to say, what the heck? You know, why is that guy following my wife or my daughter into that bathroom? Under the ordinance that they have in Charlotte or had in Charlotte and under certain other ordinances in other cities, the guy, that instinct, that normal protective, you know, thing, would just have to lie dormant, you know, and hope for the best. Yeah, I hope that guy's not going to hurt my daughter.
Right, and also for the woman. You know, women, we have instincts for a reason. And as a woman, if you are changing in a locker room or you're going to take a shower at the gym and a man walks in, a biological male, you should have an immediate reaction of distress and discomfort. And the problem is, like you said, with these laws, is that previously they reflected common sense notions of biological sex and locker rooms and shower rooms and restrooms remaining sex specific. But what happens now is it's not necessarily even to do with the transgender folks. It's about those who would use these laws to gain access for their own reasons. And
right,
that's the problem.
Yeah.
Previously, you could say, like you said, if someone walked in as a woman and a man walked in, you could say, excuse me, sir, you don't belong here. But when you open up locker rooms and showers and restrooms to both biological sexes with no guiding parameters, suddenly you put that woman or a man into the vulnerable position of not being able to say anything until something actually happens.
No, you hit the nail right on the head. Finally, Carrie, a lot of people of faith, going back to that, voted for Donald Trump, hoping that he would put a conservative on the court. We have Justice Gorsuch now. He's going to be up to the plate, getting his first swing here soon in this case in Missouri. Do you think that he will come through for the conservatives, or do you think he's going to disappoint? And not only in this case, but overall.
Well, President Trump made it very clear when he was campaigning that he would appoint someone to the bench in the same tradition of Justice Scalia. And as we know, Justice Scalia was a known originalist, meaning he really believed the Constitution should be applied the way it was meant to be interpreted, that to be faithful to the original meaning of the Constitution. And I think the facts of Trinity Lutheran lend themselves very clearly to what the First Amendment stands for, and that's that religious people, religious organizations should not be treated as second class. This is a religious status issue. Every child's safety matters, and the government should treat safety at religious schools the same as they do at public schools.
Yeah.
So I think it remains to be seen what will be done, but I would hope that all of the Supreme Court would see it that way.
Carrie, you're awesome. Thank you for taking time to join us here on What Matters in North Carolina, and we appreciate all that you the work that you do at the Alliance Defending Freedom.
Well, thank you for having me on.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, I certainly enjoyed that. She is excellent, excellent, excellent. Carrie Kupak with the Alliance Defending Freedom. She is their legal communications director. And what she said about how Title IX, in trying to accommodate those that are transgender, remember, Title IX is supposed to be against discriminating against women. That's the whole thing. Title IX, we cannot discriminate against women. And yet by saying that Title IX allows biological males into the restrooms and locker rooms and showers and changing rooms and fitting rooms and all these other private areas where women are, it actually is discriminating against women. What an irony. And you know what? Maybe you have, but I've not heard anyone else articulate that the way that Carrie did. So thank you very much, Carrie Kupak from Alliance Defending Freedom, for being on the show today. And we will look very closely at April 19th, when arguments are going to be heard by the full 9-member Supreme Court in the case Trinity Lutheran Church versus Comer. We'll keep you up to date on that. And as I said, it's one that the decision of which will probably resonate down through many, many years, as to me, it seems pretty clear that the state was discriminating against them. In fact, they said, the state of Missouri said, you know, you're a church and we're not going to let you participate in this grant program, and basically admitting their discrimination based on religion. So good stuff here on What Matters in North Carolina. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you'll share it with your friends. Remember, you can tell your friends and your family that we're at freedomactionnetwork.com, also in the iTunes and Google Play stores as well. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Jim Womack, and he is pretty fascinating. He's running for the state chairmanship for the North Carolina Republican Party, but on top of that, in fact, really very interesting is his involvement with the North Carolina Mining and Energy Commission, now the Gas and Energy Commission, which, you know, remember fracking? We don't hear much about that anymore. Well, Jim's going to give us an update on where we are with that and talk about a lot of other things as well. So we're looking forward to Jim Womack. Don't miss that tomorrow right here on What Matters in North Carolina.